This is Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTM Podcast or at Q Broadcasting. You can find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q.am. Enjoy the show. Hello, good evening, and welcome to episode 19 of Back to the Mac. It's a show about Mac stuff. We don't do iOS. And this evening, Jordan doesn't do broadband because he's got problems there. So I'm joined by Dr. Richard Harkness.
Good evening, Johnny.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. Well, Richard, this week in Apple, iCloud has been down again, affecting Game Center, iTunes, App Store, and syncing of app data. Mac sales are being cannibalized by the iPad. iPad sales are being cannibalized by the iPad Mini. iPad Mini sales are slowing in expectation of a slimmer girl's iPad with a Retina display and high resolution camera. Does my battery look big in this? 5 million defective iPhones 5S have been returned to Foxconn. Samsung employs armies of people to badmouth Apple. There are calls for the Apple CEO Paul O'Grady to be ousted. Apple share price is tanking. And it's the end of April, and there's still no new Mac Pro for Apple fanboys. Richard, is it time to bring back Scott Forstall, or perhaps switch to Windows 8?
It's never time to bring back Scott Forstall.
So we're switching to Windows 8?
Yeah, let's give Linux a try, I think.
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that. I was reading about Linux recently, actually. I thought, hey, I like that. And it was a book I've been reading about like the origins of the internet, which is very interesting. The name of the book escapes me now. But
so is this all ARPANET type stuff then?
Yeah, and even before that as well. So it's really fascinating and really interesting how Tim Berners-Lee is like in the last two chapters of the book.
Well, there was a lot going on before Tim Berners-Lee.
Yeah, there was a lot went on before him. But yet he gets all the... He's like the poster boy, isn't he? So,
but remember, Tim Berners-Lee is credited with the World Wide Web.
Yeah.
Which is different to the internet.
Yes.
So that makes sense. I mean, they were doing... what's his name? Vint Cerf, the guy with the white beard from America. Help me out here.
I don't know where you're going.
Haven't you read the book?
Yeah.
Well,
I can't remember what he did, but he was part of it, wasn't he? Was he something to do with FTP or something like that?
TCPIP. I think it's... Transport...
TCPIP, yeah.
Something protocol, internet protocol.
Yeah.
This is the splitting... This is all packet technology stuff, isn't it?
The handing off technology or something, isn't it, to do with...
And, I mean, the first email was sent in the 70s, wasn't it?
Something ridiculous like that. I couldn't believe it when I read that. I was like, what?
Was it before your birthday?
Before I was born, yeah.
That's
absolutely
what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts. You know, and NHS mail has barely got more storage now.
And iMessage has barely got any more reliability.
And iMessage just doesn't work. So, but yeah. Why did I go off? Oh, yeah. So the whole thing about Linux was interesting. Because it did make me think about Apple, because this book was written quite a while ago. I think it finished about 1996 or something like that, which is, you know, sort of prehistoric in technology terms, isn't it, really?
1996?
It ends in about 1996.
It ends in 96. So we were probably... 96? Were we using 486DX...
Put it this way.
Maybe just moving on to Intel Pentiums, I think.
Yeah, put it this way. Netscape is still a big thing at this point.
Well, I first got on the internet back in December 95, placed my first order online for a CD from America, December 95. I was doing e-commerce back then.
Wow. I can't imagine how crap the website must have looked.
You know what? It was actually a pretty good website. It was called CD Now.
Oh, that rings a bell.
Nah, don't get it confused with CD Wow.
No, CD Now rings a bell.
CD Now was a fantastic website in the States which sold CDs. The clue really is in the name.
Yeah.
But I was able to place an order with them online back then, and it was December 95, just before Christmas, and it turned up first week in January. And, brilliant. You know, I saved a lot of money because it was a CD from the States. And it was a great website. I think they got bought out by Amazon, long after. I mean, Amazon didn't come on the scene till about, I don't know, 99, 2000?
Yeah, it's relatively recent, really. Yeah. Amazon, yeah.
In fact, I've got a cool bag from CD Now downstairs because I don't know, I earned some points or something. And they sent me a cool bag that you can get about 6 cans in. And I've still got it. CD Now.
So, Amazon was quite late to the game and then just came along and crushed everything in its path.
Well, that's been its approach, isn't it? Its business model is just to hoover up as much as it can, you know?
Yeah. So the way that this made me think about, I think it was called The Origin of the Internet, the book, and it made me think about Apple, because what it was saying was that in this book he was suggesting that only things like Linux have a real future because of their open sourceness. Mm-hmm. And I thought that's really interesting because that's the way probably a lot of people thought. But because that's kind of, the internet was quite sort of open source in its roots, isn't it? When you look back at it, there's a lot of sort of international collaboration and people patching each other's programs and that sort of thing. But now it's increasingly closed off. And look at Apple, you know, the most closed off of them all, and it's doing better than anybody else's. So,
well, yeah, I wonder.
Or is it getting to be topical? Because it's not doing as healthily now as it was last year, is it? Certainly, financially, anyway.
Yeah, well, I mean, what's the reason for that? I mean, Google and Fandroid is full of malware. There's been stuff in the Google's been pulling apps out of the Play Store or something.
Yep.
Because they're full of malware. And that's the open source side. This is the side of things where, you know, people who want to, you know, customize everything, that's where they can go and do that.
Yeah.
You know, there's no control. There's no quality control.
Yeah.
You know, you let people run free with things with very few rules or boundaries, and some people are going to stuff it up for others, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think, you know, probably this was written at a time when there was more, I guess, a positive spirit, you know, more collaboration going on. And he's got a point in so much that if you've got an open source software, you literally can have an army of hundreds of thousands of developers at your disposal who will quite happily tinker away and improve something. But the opposite's true as well. You know, you've got a smaller minority who were quite happy to get in there and stick some malware in it and wreck it. And
I wonder actually, because there are some huge, you know, some huge projects on the internet where, I mean, a lot of the Linux distros, for a start, you know, where you do have, because of the open source nature, you do have these armies of developers working on it, improving it, and, you know, closing down, squashing these bugs and closing down this the vulnerabilities to malware. I don't know whether we're actually talking about something different here to the apps that we now know on mobile devices, where there are people developing things. And on the Apple side of things, you got developers developing, well, a couple of years ago, fart apps and, you know, making it look like you're drinking a pint of beer as you tip the phone back. and there is some useful stuff on there too. And on the Android side, where people are getting you to SMS premium rate numbers or dial without you knowing it. You know, there's all sorts of nasty stuff going on there. You know, siphoning off your data. So, you know, maybe we're talking about two different things, the apps and the open source nature of other things. Because there are huge advances being made on the open source side as I said.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, in terms of like an OS, that might not be as big as an issue as like you say, rubbish applications getting into Google Play or what have you.
Mm.
But
so this is A Brief History of the Future, this book.
That's the one.
The Origins of the Internet by John Norton.
Yes. Yes, thank you.
Okay, yeah, looks interesting. £6.89 and free delivery with Amazon Prime. Amazon, there's that name again.
Or you could do it the way I did it, which was to swap it with somebody else.
You could do that.
Because not very much now, but I used to use a service called Reddit Swap It. Have you heard of that?
I haven't.
Oh, it's quite good. RedditSwapIt.com. So basically, you go on, you list all the books that you've got that you're willing to swap. Other people list theirs, and it kind of matches you up. And okay, if you're happy to swap, you post your book, they post theirs.
Okay, that's pretty good. I did read a few years ago about a book sharing site. I don't think it was just London. It was anywhere. What you could do was, I mean, there's a little label on the inside front cover of the book or something, and you wrote your name or something when you read it, and then you just leave it on a tube train or something, and the next person will pick it up and read it, and then they'll just leave it on a bus, and, you know, it would just move round, you know. There's probably a word serendipity in there somewhere.
It had a name, didn't it? I do remember that, yeah. I thought it was quite a sort of quaint idea. I liked it.
I don't know whether it's still going. I can't even remember the name of it.
With this one, you directly swap, which is good. And there's no money changes hands either. So, you know, sometimes you'll have to pay more in postage because your book's big and heavy, and other times you won't. So. Yeah. It's all good. I've had quite a few good reads, and because sometimes you pick stuff that you wouldn't necessarily normally pick, which is good. So, so yeah, that's how I came to read that.
So, has anything been happening with Apple this week, Richard?
My only awareness, the two things that seem to be on my radar and that seem to be on people's minds a lot at the minute are, well, the quietness of Apple, and the fact that their share price is plummeting quite dramatically, isn't it?
Are you worried about this?
Well, no, I don't have shares, but
yeah, normally couldn't give a stuff. But, you know, we have to chat about it anyway.
I'd be very happy if I did have shares.
It's probably better to buy them now than.
That's a good thought. Might be a good time to buy them, actually, before they bring out the iWatch.
When they hit $704, $705...
That was nuts.
I mean, is this not just a market correction of what was an inflated price?
Yeah, quite possibly. But they have been extraordinarily quiet. And, you know, it may be that Tim Cook was really quite genuine when he said he was going to double down on secrecy. And maybe he's actually just being able to get that into force a bit now.
Either that or they're doing nothing.
They'll be very, very busy. I think we're sort of almost committed to a yearly cycle of OS X upgrades now. The competition's doing that as well, aren't they? So, to some extent, and everyone expects the new version of iOS every year as well. So they're going to be busy with at least that.
Is it Apple that has given us this expectation of iterations or even revolutions instead of evolution? You know, once a year, because before that, you know, Nokia just used to bring out telephones, mobile phones, whenever it felt like it. And I think,
whenever they felt like it.
One calendar year was effectively seven telephone, mobile phone years. I'm really not doing very well tonight, am I? That's because I haven't got any beer with me, drinking a cup of tea. there was a time, you know, back in the late 90s, early noughties when, you know, mobile phones, you know, the market was just growing so quickly. You know, the development of the phones was very rapid. Mm. And now we have a situation where we're looking at annual iterations of mobile phones. We're looking at annual iterations or thereabouts of the operating system, although it hasn't always been like this with OS X on the Mac, and certainly on the Microsoft side of things, it hasn't been like that at all. You know, they'll bring out an operating system in 2001 and they'll still be supporting it in 2013. And they've bought out others since, but you know, this sort of yearly cycle of things, I think, is a more recent thing really over the last 2 or 3 years with Apple, isn't it?
Yeah, and to be fair to them, they've never said that they're going to do that, have they?
No.
We've just all gotten used to it and expect it. So if they suddenly turned around and didn't do that for a year, we'd be like, What?
You know, Richard, I'd really like to be one of these highly paid analysts, because the next you ask me about any Apple product, and I'll tell you that the next one coming out is going to be thinner. If it has a battery, it's going to have longer battery life.
Later,
it's going to be lighter. Hey, this is my job here. Don't steal my thunder.
Sorry.
It's going to have a high resolution camera. It's going to have a Retina display. You know, this isn't hard, is it, to be an Apple speculator?
I think the hardest bit is coming up with some of the absolute rubbish that they come up with.
I haven't heard about the Apple television for a little while now.
Thank God.
What's the chap's name? Gene Munster, isn't it? Piper Jaffray. That was his pet rumour for the last 2 or 3 years.
It was very noisy about all that for a while, wasn't it? And then it just died. There's just nothing more being said about it at all. I can't, but we'll not go there, but I can't see them making one. It's too expensive.
And you don't get the yearly iterations of televisions, really. You look at the television industry over the last 3 years, they've spent a lot of money trying to get us to go from the old 4:3 aspect ratio to a new, whatever it is, widescreen.
16:9.
Is it 16:9, though?
I think it is. Yeah, I think that's the sort of cinematic ratio.
But isn't cinematic ratio more like 21:9 or something? I mean, they're all sorts of different ratios.
I think standard widescreen is classed as 16:9.
Okay, so they've encouraged us all to go to widescreen. So everybody, you know, jacks in their old CRT televisions and goes for these widescreen things. You know, oh, of course, going for flat screens as well. So you got your widescreen. Now you've got to go and buy a flat screen. And once they've done that, then they bring out ones with HD. So then you have to go and buy a television with HD. And then they do 3D. You know, they're trying to get you to buy televisions all the time. But you buy a television, normally a television lasts for years.
It does. And I don't know about you, but I get the impression that increasingly people don't give a stuff anymore either. I think certainly...
There's an out on.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, does it? As long as they put dross on it, who cares? I think once you've got to the point, I think it makes a difference going from standard to high def. I think you could, virtually everyone can see that. A bit like going from...
I did see a top tip from Viz, actually, Richard, whose offices are just around the corner from you up there, aren't they?
Yeah.
Top tip from Viz was to get the full effect, get the full experience of HD television without having the outlay for a new television set. Borrow your granddad's glasses and wear those for a couple of minutes, then take them off.
I like that. And equally the transition from like VCR to DVD, but beyond that, can we see enough of a difference to shell out, you know, hundreds or even £1,000+ on a new telly?
I don't know. Well, there's two things that confuse me about this Apple television idea. First of all, they're always talking about going with 55-inch screen or something, and then another one of, you know, something even bigger. And I'm thinking, these are just too big for
the UK.
For the UK.
Yeah.
I did hear a comedian once who was it? There was a comedian once gave an excellent definition of working class. He said, mm-hmm. you know when you're working class, when your flat screen television is too big for your living room.
Yeah. I think it was John Bishop, wasn't it?
It could have been. It could have been John Bishop, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. I was killing myself with that. I can't tell you the number of houses I've been into, Johnny, with sort of 50-inch plus tellies
sat about two and a half foot
away from.
Yeah. There's a complex road junction down here in Brighton called Vogue Gyratory. It's where a number of roads converge. There's like a big island in the middle with a petrol station and other buildings. And
right.
All the traffic goes around it. And as you approach from one particular direction, you get to a set of traffic lights. And as you're sat in the traffic lights, 100 metres away on the other side, or maybe 50 metres away on the other side, look up on the first floor. There's some flats above some shops. And they've got a huge television mounted high up on the wall. It's absolutely huge. You can sit there in the traffic lights watching what's on television.
They should put some speakers outside. That'd be a public service.
The other thing I don't get about televisions is not only do people have televisions that are far too large for their living room, but what they'll do is rather than put it, you know, where you'd put your television conventionally, they'll mount it above the fireplace, high up on the wall somewhere. So you're getting a crick in your neck when you're watching it because you're having to look up towards the ceiling to see it.
You see, I'm far too sensible for that because that's what loads of people do, don't they? But I've got my telly on a proper stand, so it's at eye level when I'm sitting on the sofa.
Well, that makes sense.
I'm not giving myself a bad neck watching TV.
No.
Just for the aesthetics of it. That's just... No.
I don't think you get any aesthetic from mounting it high up.
But I think people like the thing of it being warm.
It's not a mirror. It's not a picture.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. I don't understand why people do. I mean, I hardly watch the thing anyway.
I know. I was reading something. Now, where did I read it? Oh, I think it was on a money-saving thing. And I was thinking, I wonder if I could get away with it. It was saying about you don't need a TV license if you don't ever watch.
That was on moneysavingexpert.com,
yes,
wasn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yes. Yeah. if you don't ever watch live TV, and I thought, God, I could probably do that.
Yeah.
I really could.
I could.
Yeah.
I never watch live television. I actually watched In the Night Garden with my daughter this evening. But I'm sure I could just record a few of those. I'm sure I could just record one and play it for her all the time. In fact, her favourite is Chitty Chitty Bang Bang. She loves watching that.
Yeah,
we've watched it hundreds of times already.
I'm sure you could get away with not watching it as well, Johnny. I think you could live without it, couldn't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Chitty Chitty Bang Bang was made before I was born, even.
I think it's funny that she likes that, and then. In the Night Garden, which is just the most demented acid trip you've ever seen.
Look, if you're going to have children's television inspired purportedly by LSD, then, bring back Magic Roundabout. Let's have something that's decent.
It is the Magic Roundabout for the modern generation, definitely.
It is, isn't it? And I think that it's lost a lot. I think Magic Roundabout is still there. In fact, they should bring back Rhubarb and Custard.
Well, my kids are really into Scooby-Doo, which I'm enjoying. So
yeah, my son likes that.
What the hell has this got to do with Mac, Johnny?
I've no idea. It's more about rubbish that's on television.
We went from Apple TV to Scooby-Doo. That's quite a good transition.
I'm sure I had something more to say on Apple TV.
The other thing with it is that doesn't wash for me is. They can't really expect to pump out a new telly every year and for people to buy it.
No. Well, that's what I was driving at, man.
My
long spiel was, you're not going to replace your television every year, so it's not really going to fit their model of business, is it? Okay, no. you buy a Mac, an iMac or a MacBook Pro, and it's probably going to last you... I mean, if it was a PC, it would last you 3 years. Because it's an Apple, because it's a Mac, it's actually good for 6, 7, 8, 9 years. The only thing that's going to catch you out is how the technology moves on. It's going to get slower, and there's going to get a point where it can't run the latest operating system. But I've been out to see people who are still running on Macs that are 8 or 9 years old, and they've had no issues, except for when their printer is broken. They've had to go out and buy a new printer, and they found that the printer drivers or the printer manufacturer doesn't support such an old Mac.
Yeah.
And so they have to upgrade the operating system, or they have to bite the bullet and go out and buy a new Mac.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the computer is working just fine.
That's like the tail wagging the dog there, isn't it, really?
It is a little bit, yeah. So coming back to the Apple TV, which really isn't the focus of Back to the Mac, I can't see that a physical Apple television device is really going to fit Apple's way of doing things, because they're not going to be able to get this yearly iteration. Well, you know, maybe they will, you know. Maybe it'll be a bit bigger, a bit slimmer. It will have a higher resolution camera on it. It will have a better Retina display on it. All the things that we said earlier as an analyst.
But to get the... I would have thought to get the higher turnover that they want.
Well, this is it. They're not going to get people replacing it every 2 years, every 1 year.
They'll charge way more than what most people would be prepared to spend on a TV. I can't see Apple making a TV in the price range that the majority of people would be prepared to pay for one.
I can't see Apple charging over the odds for any of their devices, Richard.
No, that never happens. And yeah, so I could totally see them making a better Apple TV in its current format. You know, like a plug-in one that you could plug into anything. I could see them creating a better version of that, and maybe like a one that plugs in and records live TV and that sort of stuff. You know, like a sort of what do you call them?
PVRs, yeah.
Type of device. They could do that, and I would probably buy one of them.
Yeah, current Apple TV, I think this is something that's long overdue, and they've made a few changes with, I think it's iOS that runs on there, or a version of iOS that runs on the existing Apple TV, is apps on there. Just imagine if you had a BBC iPlayer app. That would make it a killer device for the UK, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing that that's never come yet, because it's obviously not difficult for them to do it. They've added other ones on.
I mean, it's not rocket surgery, is it?
No. Rocket surgery, oh, that'd be fun to try out.
Don't take us down another tangent.
Yeah. Aim at his left hand. Off it goes. So I don't see why they can't do that. I really don't.
Well, email.
What they really need to do, please, 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 Apple, is please accept that there are other countries other than America in the world. We don't care about NBA. We don't care about baseball. You know, we don't watch them in this country.
And we don't use the Oxford comma either.
put a rugby channel and a football channel on there for the UK.
Well, I mean, Premier League is huge, isn't it? Not just in the UK, but elsewhere. But
oh, yeah, of course it is.
Yeah, well, I mean, World Series baseball.
Yeah, well, it's you know, I've got nothing against it. I'm sure it's a great sport, but it's nothing in this country. It's a minor thing.
It's rounders.
Yeah, it's a minor thing in this country. You know, do you know anybody who follows baseball in the UK? No, me neither. I hear a few people talking about American football from time to time, but...
Yeah, that's rubbish as well.
It's just a massive advert interspersed with some sport, isn't it?
It is.
And there goes our American contingent.
Jacob doesn't listen anyway.
Oh, dear me. So there we go. We'll put the world to rights with that.
So anyway, in the show notes here, it says that you're going to have a rant about something, Richard.
We've had a good rant about Apple TV. iMessage.
Oh, iMessage. Shocking.
Cheesing me off this week. Absolutely cheesing me off.
It's a fantastic idea. And I just can't help thinking why Apple hasn't learned from its own history with iTunes and extended iMessage to the PC platform as well, because other platforms are available. And a lot of PC owners will own an iPad or will own an iPhone.
Mm.
And I think there is an iCloud app that plugs into, you know, that you can download for the PC. But, you know, iMessage on the PC, I would have thought that would make sense, you know, to get people hooked on the Apple experience, you know, bring it over.
Yeah, I don't think they'd have much luck with that from the experiences I've had with iMessage.
Well, maybe that's why they've not done it, because it's been shocking recently, hasn't it?
I cannot get my head around why Apple, with all of their wealth and experience and all the rest of it, can't suss out cloud-based services. It's their absolute Achilles heel, and it has been for a long time. I mean, the thing that I've had recently is, out of nowhere, for some reason, without me doing anything, to my knowledge, any message that my wife's tried to send me to my phone on iMessage, or really just as a text message in effect, but obviously the phone's open to do it as an iMessage, mm-hmm. is going to my iPad, mm-hmm. and only my iPad.
Now, Jordan was talking about a similar problem he was having. With his iPad and iPhone when he was trying to communicate with his girlfriend. You know, the one device was picking it up. I think her iPhone had run out of battery. The iPad was upstairs. He was sending messages. They were being marked as delivered because they were arriving on the iPad, but you know, not on her iPhone. It's really frustrating how they pop up on one device and not another, even when you've configured it. And then when they do pop up, you know, say you've been using your iPhone to respond, or even iMessage on your Mac, because Back to the Mac is a Mac show. We don't do iOS.
Yeah.
So we're using iMessage on the Mac. And communicating with somebody. And then you go to one of your other devices, let's say your other Mac, and you load up iMessage, and then all the messages come through. Have you ever loaded up iMessage actually on a Mac when there's loads of messages due to come through? You know it has that...
It has a complete fit, doesn't it?
It does. You know, it has that nyum sound as a message comes in. Because as you load it up, it goes nyum, 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 nyum,
nyum, nyum. Sounds like In the Night Garden again, Johnny.
Well, be that LSD I took earlier.
That's why I didn't need a pint.
But, you know, all the messages, not only do they come through like that, but they come through in the wrong order. Now, how difficult can it be to have a timestamp associated with a message, and then I've cracked it, actually. I know why. Because rather than using the ISO date format of year, year, month, month, day, day, which you can sort in a spreadsheet, you can sort in data, you can sort very easily, the Americans use this crazy format of month, month, day, day, year, year.
Mm-hmm.
So you try sorting that data, no wonder they're coming through in the wrong order. So Americans, stop using the Oxford comma where it's not needed, please. There are times when it is needed, but it's not a rule. You don't have to use it all the time. And also, sort out your date format. I suggest that we ditch the British format as well, and we'll go over to the ISO standard, which is year, month, day. Makes sense.
Well, like I said on Twitter a while ago, Johnny, the only way that I'll accept any changes is if we all move across to Stardate. That has to be the convention for the future. So it's doing that, and I'm just bashing my head off the wall, and you know, so you try turning things on and off to no avail, and you read the forums, and somebody says this works, so you try that, and that doesn't work, and it's just an awful, awful experience. When it works, it's fabulous, but when it goes wrong, it seems nigh on impossible to figure out why it's going wrong.
It is very frustrating. iCloud has been dogged with problems just in the last week or so, but a number of times over recent months, you know, I've noticed, you know, times when iTunes or the App Store hasn't been responding, data doesn't seem to be syncing between apps, Game Center is down, which is critical if you're an avid letterpress player like I am. If anybody wants to challenge me at letterpress, my Game Center ID is Johnny W, JohnnyW. I'll see if you can beat me at letterpress. Yeah, you probably can, but...
Word of warning, you've got to be pretty good.
No, you know, there are a lot of people out there who are very, very good at it. Either that or they're cheating.
Well, that tally you got up to a while ago was pretty epic.
726 words played.
That was incredible. How you just managed to squeeze that out of that grid of letters?
Well, it's a 5x5 grid of letters, and we managed to get 726 words out of it before I got beaten.
That was so good.
iCloud. iMessage. It's a big problem. So, I mean, you know, Steve Jobs, if he'd had any sense, would have bought Dropbox.
Yep. I don't know. I wonder whether it's the same crowd that have been responsible for cloud-based services for a long time, and if it is, I think somebody needs to go down there with a big pointy stick.
There has been reports this week in Mac News that one of the developers involved in the Mobile Me project, which was much maligned previously, basically said it was all Steve Jobs' fault. But then perhaps he would say that, wouldn't he?
It's a bit late now, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a bit. So. You know what? We haven't caught up on matters arising from the last show, episode 18, last week. What did you think of episode 18, Richard?
Have I listened to it yet?
Haven't you?
Was that just you and Jordan?
It's Jacob, myself and Jordan last week. Have you not listened?
Sorry, I haven't got around to it yet. I will.
No, you won't.
Why?
Because we tried an experiment last week. We thought we'd use a Windows 8 machine to record the show, and it mysteriously got lost after we'd recorded it.
No.
Yeah. So we won't be using Windows ever again.
Are you serious?
I'm serious about half of it.
Which half?
Not the Windows half.
So you lost the whole show?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's good.
It is a bit.
I thought I hadn't heard anything about it.
Yeah.
See, because I kind of have a sequence that I go through in terms of listening to me podcasts. You know, and I usually it's more towards the end of the week that I get around to listening to ours.
We missed episode 18. Anyway, should we start the show and talk about the jam experiment, Richard? What is the jam experiment?
The jam experiment. It was something I was reading in.
I'm very fussy about jam.
Well,
I only eat apricot jam unless it's on scones. Never scones, always scones. And then I'll have a strawberry jam. But the cream has to go on top. It's always jam, then cream on scones, not scones. Otherwise, it's always apricot jam. Apricot jam on hot cross buns or croissant. Very nice. Anyway, Richard, tell me about the jam experiment.
So the jam experiment, that was something that I came across when I was reading around general sort of things to do with... Oh, I think it's kind of reducing stress and stuff like that, I think it was. And what this was a series of experiments, and what they did in them was...
Is it anything to do with jam?
It is a lot to do with jam.
Okay.
But in a broader context. What they did was they did an experiment where they put up stalls in a shopping centre or something, and they kept alternating between either a stall that had six choices of jam or a stall that had 18 choices of jam or something like that. And then they looked at the outcome. Excuse me. They looked at the outcomes of doing that, and it was really quite staggering the difference in people's satisfaction. And
so let me just visualise this. So you've got one stall which has 6 jams on it, and another stall with 8, or at a different time, the stall has 18 jams on it.
Yeah.
These are all apricot jams.
No, various flavours. Oh. Lots and lots of different flavours.
Did they have apricot?
So I'm sure apricot was one of them, yes. Okay. You're obsessed with it, aren't you? Are you doing your thing of trying to throw me off again?
I'm doing very well.
No, I'm too polite to keep talking over the top of you, that's why. So the 16 probably had all sorts of, you know, rhubarb and ginger and things like that.
What happened to the other two?
So whilst everyone was enjoying tasting it, what they actually showed was a lot less people converted into buying when they had all these multitude of choices. And they've shown this with other things as well, that the more choice you give people, the more confused they kind of get and the more apathy they get about it and the less likely they are to make a decision and purchase something. And it did make me think a little bit about the way that Apple's heading. I do worry a little bit that they're starting to stray back to the bad old days before Steve Jobs came back into the fold, where their product line was starting to proliferate a bit out of hand.
So what you're saying is they really need to get back to the apricot.
Yeah.
I think you might have something there. I've certainly heard before about 6 being the optimal number of mm-hmm. something. So if you have a menu, you've got 6 items in the menu. Anything beyond that, and people become word blind really to what they're looking at, it becomes overwhelming.
Yeah,
and they're less able to make a choice, much like the jam experiment. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think I've said before in this show, you know, you want to go and buy a printer, have a look at HP's range. Where do you start? Which one do you need?
Yeah.
Go and look at Apple Macs, take the iMac. You've got 2, essentially, a small one and a big one. And then within each of those, you've got 2. You know, the best one and a better one. Or something like that. You know, you've got a good one and one that's better. So, you know, you've got a fairly limited choice. You know, if you're going to get a 21.5-inch iMac, you're going to get one with that spec, or you're going to get one with a better spec. And the same with 27. And then you get into build to order if you really want to do that. Which products do you think they're growing too far with here?
I think they're not too bad on the Mac side, although something struck me the other day and I thought, why don't they just drop the A label?
That's the way it might be going anyway. I mean, there's been talk
already about... Let's call it the MacBook.
Well, there's already been talk about, you know, because they're dropping DVD drives out of the machines, they're making the machine slimmer.
Mm.
You know, there has been talk about, and of course nobody knows anything here, no observers do anyway, but, you know, the Air range and the MacBook range, you know, converging. And they've dropped the 17-inch MacBook Pro already, haven't they?
I don't think that would be particularly a bad idea. I think it would certainly be less confusing for people, because a lot of time I see people sitting around in coffee shops and stuff like that using MacBook Pros.
Starbucks is not a coffee shop, Richard.
All right. What would you call it then? A place for people to pose that happens to sell coffee. And before anyone gets upset about that, I drink at Starbucks all the time, so I'm very guilty.
I never do.
You're too cool for school, Johnny. You're ahead of the curve.
Richard, I went to a nice little independent coffee place around the corner from here yesterday lunchtime. I had 2 coffees and a croissant. And last night, I couldn't sleep. I was still talking to James at Late Night Loaf at about 2 o'clock this morning. We were tweeting each other. We were direct messaging each other on Twitter because both of us were still awake. And he'd been up since 5:45 or something, you know, on call.
I could top that. I made a chocolate ganache or for a recipe that I followed. And it's kind of like this dead healthy one with avocado and nuts as the base and all this kind of stuff. I was so pranged off it. I was still awake at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Oh, no.
I was like, this is ridiculous. I can't sleep at all.
Mind you, I my ears did prick up. I'm starting to get interest when I hear a doctor talk about healthy chocolate.
It was very, very good. The only thing that was bad in it was the cocoa powder, and then it was dark chocolate cocoa powder, which is not that bad for you. So
you'd be bouncing off the walls with that stuff, wouldn't you?
Well, that's what I mean. I was just so hyper on it. And I really didn't think it would have that kind of effect on us.
So meanwhile, back in Starbucks. With MacBook Pros.
Yeah, you see all these people sitting around with Mac Pros, and I'm thinking, you're not using a Mac Pro. You don't, for something that needs a Mac Pro, they're not sitting around doing video editing and stuff like that. They're just sitting typing emails out and, you know, the odd bit of spreadsheet. And I just think, you didn't need that. A MacBook Air would have done you.
I took my son to football in the park one Saturday, a few Saturdays ago, and popped into the cafe there to get a coffee because, you know, the weather's been really cold down here up until yesterday.
Yeah.
And popped in to get a coffee. There's a bloke sitting in there with a laptop. It happened to be a PC laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And as I walked past, I could see what he was doing. And he wasn't doing any video editing because, as everybody knows, you can't video edit on a laptop, on a PC. It's difficult anyway. Cut to the chase, John. He was sitting there playing solitaire.
Ah, that old stalwart.
I'd be embarrassed. One,
that was my favourite bit of a Windows computer.
It's the only bit that works. One, I'd be embarrassed to have a Windows laptop out in public. Second, I'd be embarrassed at playing solitaire on it.
He really is a man stuck in the past, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, why doesn't he bring his Game Boy with Tetris on? At least it's retro.
Yeah, he would be cool then.
Yeah.
Especially if it was an original Game Boy. That would be very cool.
That's it. So anyway, which jam won?
Oh, I don't know. That wasn't the point. It was the point that... less is more when it comes to choice, and the less choice, the more conversion to purchases you get. So what, I'll tell you why this sprung to mind, because I know this is not Mac related, sorry, was, I don't know if you've heard this, there's been some whispers about Apple making a cheap iPhone, and Apple making a slightly bigger iPhone as well. Have you heard all this?
I've heard all this, yeah.
And I'm thinking, I really hope there's no truth in these rumours, because it's going to start to really muddy their product lineup, and you are going to start getting into a situation where people get a bit bewildered about which one to go for and what advantage does this one offer me over that one. And I just hope they don't go there. I really hope they don't, because that was part of what was responsible for their downfall the last time.
So given the choice with a number of different podcasts about Mac topics about Apple topics available on the iTunes store, do you think we're just muddying the waters with Back to the Mac?
Is there that many Mac-specific ones?
I think there's a fair few.
Is there?
Well, no, maybe not Mac-specific. They're Apple-specific, aren't they?
Yeah. Because I think as we're demonstrating right now, it's quite... It's quite hard to be Mac specific. There's just not enough. Some weeks there's not enough anyway.
Yeah. So have we got any hardware or software, Richard?
God, you know, I was thinking about this. No, I haven't. Have you?
Okay, no. All right. anybody you would like to mention on the show this week?
Well, I've been having a social media blackout over the last week or so. So no.
Okay, so we won't mention at Neil Cochran one.
He's going to sue us soon, you know.
Not until he's got his invoice in with you. All right, where can we find you on the interwebs?
You're not finding me anywhere. At Rich Harkness is the best place to get a hold of us. On Twitter.
on Twitter, and me at Johnny_Winter, and at Q Broadcasting, and at BTTM Podcast. Is that right? The last one?
Yeah.
Yeah, good. So, yeah, you can find the show on Q.am. That's Q-U-E.am. And bit low on Mac content this week, but at least we had something. Very sorry for episode 18, which disappeared into the ether after we finished recording last week. It was rather frustrating. Okay, until next time. Thanks very much for listening.
Bye-bye.
That was Back to the Mac from the Q Broadcasting Network. You can follow us on Twitter at BTTM Podcast or at Q Broadcasting, or find us on the internet at Q.am. That's Q-U-E.am. Intro and outro music is used with the kind permission of Tariq Greenfield, composer and producer. Find him on the internet, www.tdmss.com. Thanks for listening.
Apple Macintosh.